listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is 8:05 Central Time. That means it is time to study the daily New Testament reading. Our guest pastor joining us by phone today, Pastor Mark Etter from Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky. Good morning, Pastor Etter.
Good morning. It's a joy to be with you.
Well, thank you. It's a joy to have this time to study with you this morning. Tell us about your congregation, Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky.
Okay. My congregation's a little bit small, a smaller congregation. In northern Kentucky, we're across from Cincinnati. There's three counties here that are about 300,000 people, and only two Missouri Synod churches in the whole bunch. The area here is kind of transient, and so we see a lot of people come in and out, which has tended to keep us small.
Mm-hmm.
But we have right now a former member who's studying at Fort Wayne Seminary, and a former member who's down in Florida running a men's program at a large church down there, plus easily a dozen of our former members who are church council members and elders and music leaders at Missouri Synod churches across the country. We tend, because we're small, to get people involved who might not get involved in a larger church, and once they find they can use their gifts when they leave us, because this is kind of a transitory area, they go off and they do great ministry somewhere else, which is our loss and other churches' gain. It's a neat ministry. We're really blessed and very vibrant congregation. About a third of our members are lifelong Lutherans. A third are reclaimed Lutherans, people who've been away from the church from 8 to 10 years. And a third are new converts. So we're really in there and making a difference in God's kingdom, which is kind of fun.
Well, thanks be to God for the ministry of Bethany Lutheran Church there in Erlinger, Kentucky. We are studying Romans chapter 9 today, verses 19 through 33. What would you like us to know as we prepare to study this text in Romans chapter 9?
Well, as you read Romans, the section from chapter 9 to chapter 11 almost seems like an interruption. You know, you've gone from the great doctrinal teaching in the first 8 chapters where Paul talked about law, all have sinned, and gospel, what Christ has done, and the wonderful benefits. And then you get this set of chapters before you get to the practical section of chapters 12 to 16. And I think Paul has kind of two reasons. One is a personal reason, because you often wonder if the Jews don't kind of resent Paul. You know, here he was a leader in the Jewish church, and now he's ministering the Gentiles and bringing them in. But I think there's also a doctrinal reason. You know, he's laid out all the gospel in those first 8 chapters, and everybody's going, well, what about the Jews? You know, if God is so wonderful and so such a merciful God, why does he seem to be rejecting the Jews? Why is God seen to not be fair? And I think Paul, especially in chapter 9, where he has the four attributes of God, and in following in the verses afterwards as well, the chapters afterwards, really answers that question. You know, what the things haven't changed. God hasn't changed. But that the Jews who've rejected God really have left themselves out of God's great plan.
Well, very good. Let's dig into Romans chapter 9 today, verses 19 through 33. If you have a question or a comment along the way, give us a call or an email, 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727 is the toll-free number in North America, or you can email us, kfuo@kfuo.org, as we're studying Romans chapter 9, verses 19 through 33 today with Pastor Etter from Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky. All right, let's take a look at verse 19. You will say to me then, why does he still find fault? For who can resist his will? But who are you, O man, to answer back to God? Will what is molded say to its molder, why have you made me like this? Has the potter no right over the clay to make out of the same lump one vessel for honorable use and another for dishonorable use? What if God, desiring to show his wrath and to make known his power, has endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, in order to make known the riches of his glory for vessels of mercy, which he has prepared beforehand for glory? Even us, whom he has called, not from the Jews, but also from the Gentiles. As indeed, he says in Hosea, those who were not my people, I will call my people, and her who was not beloved, I will call beloved. And in the very place where it was said to them, you are not my people, they will be called sons of the living God. All right, you will say to me then, verse 19, why does he still find fault? For who can resist his will? Pastor?
Yeah. It's interesting in this whole section. You've talked about, I'm assuming yesterday in the first part of chapter 9, talked about God's faithfulness and his righteousness. Here in this section, we're going to talk about God's justice. You know, is God fair? You know, we live in a time where people are really taught to not trust anyone. And as we face disappointments in life, we kind of look at God and say, well, why did God do that? Why isn't God taking care of me? And so Paul deals with a question he's probably heard often again in his ministry. Why does God blame us? What does God have against us who are Jews? You know, and Paul deals with that in three big ways. One, he talks about trusting the wisdom and sovereignty of God. It kind of reminds you of Job, you know, where Job was arguing with God, you know, in that book, and really saying, you know, how can God bring all of this difficulty on me and all of these problems? And blaming God, almost looking for a God who would kind of help him and be fair and everything else. The second thing is we're going to jump in when we get to verse 22. I don't know if we're ready for that or not. Is really trusting God with the big picture, you know. And that's kind of like the whole story of Jonah, where Jonah's sitting out on Nineveh and looking and saying, God, this is not what I expected. You know, and really struggling with mm-hmm. When God chooses to show his wrath and when God chose to be merciful. You know, and then the final thing will be verse 25, where we really get to the whole point of trusting God's mercy and who he wants to give mercy to and who he doesn't want to give mercy to. And those became real problems, I think, for the Jews, who really expected God to play by their rules and not really let God be God, be sovereign, you know, because God's not answerable to us. God's not responsible to us.
But who are you, O man, to answer back to God? What is molded say to its molder? Why have you made me like this? This reminds me of Genesis when Adam says, the woman you put here with me, she's the one who caused me to sin. In one breath, Adam blames God and the woman. Here, will what is molded say to its molder, why have you made me like this?
Yeah. You know, it's us as people trying to tell God how to do things. You know, we want to give God the blame for evil in the world. We want to give God the blame for all of the problems. You know, it's almost as if, you know, we're questioning God. You know, if there's trouble in the world, God, either you're too weak to deal with it or you just don't care. And the real challenge here that Paul's saying is, who are we, you know? Who are we to talk back to God? We're the created ones. He's the creator. He's the one who formed us. He's the one who made us. He's the one who has the wisdom that understands the whole world. And that's really the crux for Paul here.
Yeah, has the potter no right over the clay to make out of the same lump one vessel for honorable use and another for dishonorable use? Has the creator no right to make what he wishes?
You bet. You know, and again, it's a difference of, okay, you know, we can look at someone who has great talent, who is born into a wealthy family, and say, okay, Lord, why wasn't that me? You know, and God has the right to give some, you know, great talents in terms of people who have musical abilities on the one hand, or who have great business sense on another hand. And for us, the challenge always is to be the person that God has made us and to be the best that we have been made, and to let God mold us and shape us, and to follow the plan that he has for us. And that's kind of what Paul's getting at here. You know, Jews, you can't think that you're better than everyone else. Be who God has made you. Flourish where he's planted you. Be the people that God has in mind for you and that God has a plan for you.
It's easy, I'm sure, especially in today's American pop culture Christianity, to take this out of context to be who you are is a common phrase, you know, just be you is a common phrase, to be who God made you to be, with a misunderstanding about what God makes us to be, what is God's will for us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like a father that has three children. You know, I happen to have three adult children, and if I was to expect each of those children to be just like the other ones of them, that would be wrong. They were each made very differently. They were each made in a special way and having special gifts that the other two don't have. And I think we sometimes focus on what we don't have rather than focusing on the wonderful blessings that God has given to us and the special person that God has made us. Our challenge is not to be something different than we are, but be to the best person that God has made, using the gifts he's has for us, finding and praying and being in communion with our Lord so we can find out his plan for us, so that we can thrive and prosper in the kind of person that he has made us to be. And I don't think people in our society have figured that out. We tend to have certain things that we value more than others. We have always had this jealousy of someone in society who we perceive to be smarter or richer or more talented, rather than just being who we are. And that's the beauty for us as God's people.
What if God, desiring to show his wrath and to make known his power, has endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction in order to make known the riches of his glory for vessels of mercy, which he has prepared beforehand for glory?
Yeah. A lot of the commentaries and stuff really looked at Pharaoh back in Moses' day, you know, that God allowed Pharaoh to be who he was in order that God's great power might be shown, you know. And you find that throughout the Old Testament in history. You find that oftentimes even in other history where God allows people to be who they are and is sometimes seemingly allows evil to go on for a while because the time is not ripe to show his mercy, to show his power, or to deliver his people. You know, you look and you wonder, for example, why are the people of Israel in Egypt for 400 years? You know, surely God could have delivered them before that. Or why did the people of Israel go into captivity in Babylon for 70 years? Surely God could have done more and done things faster. But God is sovereign. God understands the scope of history. God understands how to get the best result and what will bring the greatest blessing for his people. And what basically we need to do is not question God's timing, but to allow God to act with his sovereign wisdom and to do the great things that he has in mind. Because God's got the big picture. God's got the big picture, and we need to kind of trust that picture.
And this includes even us, whom he has called, not from the Jews only, but also from the Gentiles.
Yeah. There you go back to Jonah. I picture Jonah sitting there, you know, underneath the little plant that he's got, looking at the city of Nineveh, and just waiting for God to come down with lightning and hail and everything else and destroy this wicked city. And it doesn't happen. And he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it, you know, that God can bring the Gentiles into his kingdom and offer them faith as well. And that probably had to be a real challenge for the people watching Paul. Paul, you who were one of our Pharisees and leaders of our church are now going out there and bringing it to the Gentiles. What's with that? Isn't God the God of the Jews? And they're just not getting it. But God can do his grace for all people.
As indeed he says in Hosea, those who were not my people, I will call my people, and her who was not beloved, I will call beloved. And in the very place where it was said to them, you are not my people, they will be called sons of the living God.
Yeah. In some ways, for me, that's almost autobiographical for Paul. You know, he's a Jew, but he's one who on the Damascus Road, God called his people, who at that point were persecuting his people. Paul knows maybe more than almost anyone else in Scripture what it's like to feel the great mercy of God and to be included in God's mercy and love when you really felt like you were outside of it. The Jews are really struggling with that. I'm not sure they saw a need in Paul's day for mercy. Their inheritance was from Abraham. They earned salvation by keeping all the laws and all the laws that they built around the laws. But Paul gets it. Paul understands what it's like to be not a person of God and suddenly be his people, to not feel the love of God and suddenly have God shower his love on you when you don't deserve it.
We're studying the Daily New Testament Reading with Pastor Mark Etter from Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky. We're in Romans chapter 9 today, verses 19 through 33. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call or an email, 1-800-730-2727. The email address, kfuo@kfuo.org. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to His Time.
Trust Worldwide KFUO for sacred music of the church every night of the year. Weeknights after evening prayer, you can hear sacred music on KFUO in St. Louis, streaming online at kfuo.org. You can hear the difference with our online stream in high-quality stereo, whether you listen on your smartphone, Wi-Fi radio, or laptop, as well as your business or home computers. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news, trusted for more than 90 years.
Hi, I'm Cornel Kenny, a senior at Lutheran High School North in St. Louis. A good education opens doors. Because of my college prep training at Lutheran North, I'm set up for success in college and throughout the rest of my life. More importantly, my school has helped to grow my faith, giving me the foundation for lifelong Christian service and leadership. Have you checked out Lutheran schools lately? Learn more at lhsnstl.org. That's lhsnstl.org.
You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. We're studying the Daily New Testament Reading with Pastor Mark Etter from Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky. We're in Romans chapter 9 today, verses 19 through 33. Pastor, anything else up through verse 26 before we go on to the next section?
It basically, I think, is the fact that the Jews have to let God be God. They can't tell God how to be. They have to accept him as he is because God is wiser than we are. God is more powerful than we are. And God sees the big picture and we don't. So I think that's kind of the crux that Paul's getting at. You know, the people are questioning, the Jews are questioning his ministry and questioning what God's doing as if God has somehow changed on them and God's not fair. And Paul's saying, no, God is fair. You just haven't really accepted and aren't willing to listen.
All right, let's take a look at verse 27 and following. And Isaiah cries out concerning Israel, though the number of the sons of Israel be as the sand of the sea, only a remnant of them will be saved. For the Lord will carry out his sentence upon the earth fully and without delay. And as Isaiah predicted, if the Lord of hosts had not left us offspring, we would have been like Sodom and become like Gomorrah. Oh, goodness. All right. Isaiah cries out concerning Israel. The number of the sons of Israel as be as the sand of the sea.
Yeah, Paul here is letting the people know by quoting these passages from Isaiah and the one he's already quoted from Hosea that God hasn't changed and God knew this was coming. You know, that all of this was prophesied previously. You know, the remnant of Jews will believe along with the Gentiles and they'll be the children of God. But the challenge is going to be that, like before, you know, only, you know, so many of the people will reject. I mean, when you compare, for example, the number of Jews before the Babylonian captivity and those who actually came back with Zerubbabel and with Ezra and with Nehemiah, it's just a fraction. And I think Paul is saying what happened then is going to happen again. You know, only a fraction of the Jews, but there will be believing, there will be a remnant, and it was all something that God knew would happen, and it's not God who left them, it's the people who left God.
And only a remnant will be saved, for the Lord will carry out his sentence upon the earth fully and without delay, as Isaiah predicted. If the Lord of hosts had not left us offspring, we would have been like Sodom and Gomorrah.
And that's the great mercy of God. You know, think of all of the people throughout the Old Testament who are gone. Can we find an Edomite? Can we find an Ammonite? Can we find someone who is from the Moabite tribe? All of those nations are gone, and those are all of those were descendants of Abraham. And yet they're all gone. But the Jewish people are here. The Jewish people are the people, the one nation who can trace their ancestry back for thousands of years, far more so than Germans can, or Italians, or French. If it wasn't for God, they would have been like Sodom and Gomorrah. They'd be gone. But God made sure that a remnant survived all the way through those years, that the Jewish people of Paul's day and the Jewish people even of today are evidence of God's grace and God's mercy for this people that are considering him to not be fair.
Anything else up through verse 29, Pastor, before we go on to the next section?
Not really. I think sometimes part of the challenge for us is that God's ways don't make sense to us. You know, it's kind of like God's doing calculus and we're in kindergarten. You know, it's not that what he's doing is wrong. You know, it's just the fact that we can't comprehend it. All three of my adult children did calculus in high school, and two of them did calculus at college. And it was funny, they would talk about it when they'd come home from college, and one of my children is a mechanical engineer, and she describes what she does at work, and it goes right over the top of my head. But that doesn't mean what she's doing is wrong. It just means I'm not wise enough in that area to understand. And I think that's part of what Paul's getting at here. The Jews are talking back to God, saying, God, you're not operating the way we think you should. And Paul's saying, but God's wiser. And as you look at these passages in Isaiah, he's looking and saying, look at the broad stretch of time and how God in his wisdom was able to keep you as a people when so many others, Sodom and Gomorrah, Edomites, Ammonites, Moabites, all of those are gone. God is one you can trust.
What then shall we say? That Gentiles who do not pursue righteousness have attained it, that is, a righteousness that is by faith, but that Israel, who pursued a law, would lead to righteousness, did not succeed in reaching that law. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as if it were based on works. They have stumbled over the stumbling stone, as it is written, behold, I am laying in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame.
Paul gets at the very heart of grace here. For the Jew, the grace was something that you partially earned. You did your sacrifices. You gave your tithe. You kept the Sabbath. And Paul's saying, no, it's a righteousness that came by faith, a righteousness that the law can't attain, but a righteousness that comes by what Paul has talked about, the cross of Jesus Christ. And that becomes a stumbling block for the Jews. You know, they can't understand why their inheritance in Abraham, why their ancestry, why that's not the thing that gives them salvation. But it's the cross of Jesus Christ. It is the wonderful joy where God can give grace to Gentile as well as Jew, because Jesus has earned it. It's not about being an ancestor of Abraham, as he's talked about before in this, based on what we do, but the faith that Abraham had, as Paul's talked about earlier in the book of Romans.
Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as if it were based on works. Where do works get us?
Works are our response to God. Works are, I mean, it's like a child who draws a drawing and mom puts it up on the refrigerator. That drawing doesn't earn a child food and clothing and shelter for the next day. It's a response. It's a building of the relationship that we have with God. And our works are a chance for us to operate with God, to work with God, and for us, even as we have values and morals, for us to follow God's ways, that we avoid so many of the pitfalls and booby traps of the world. Works aren't something that earn anything from God. Works are a response to God and our living with God and our living for God and our living by God's grace, that we have the best possible life that we can have because we care about other people, because we're willing to serve God, and because we care about ourselves so much that we're willing to live with his values and his morals and have the best kind of life that we can possibly have.
Anything else in this last section, Pastor, in verses 30 through 33?
I think the biggest thing is jumping to the first verse of chapter 10, and that he says, brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to God for the Israelites is that they may be saved. He wants them to get over that stumbling block. He wants them to accept the beautiful gospel message that he has given throughout this book and to put aside all of their doubts and distrust of God and accept God who he is and be one with the Gentiles in this new church that is forming as the gospel goes forward into the whole Roman world. I think that's a big thing. You have to kind of jump and look at that first verse, and because it really has an impact compared to what we've just talked about in verses 30 and following.
Looking over the text as a whole, Pastor, anything else you'd like for us to learn in Romans chapter 9 today?
I think we just got to let God be God, because only when God is our God, we're going to put hope in him. We see his wisdom. We understand that He gets the big picture, not just even the picture for a year, but for our whole life and for everything before us and after us. And trust our God. Trust him and put ourselves in his hands, following him, because that's how people like Abraham, people like David, people like Noah, people like Isaiah, that's how they succeeded and were victorious in life. You can't doubt God. You got to trust him. And when you trust God, God will take you to places that you cannot find by yourself.
We've been studying the Daily New Testament reading with Pastor Mark Etter from Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky. Pastor Etter, thanks for being our guest pastor today, helping us study Romans chapter 9, verses 19 through 33.
Thank you very, very much. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, most certainly. God bless you and all the saints there at Bethany Lutheran Church in Erlinger, Kentucky. Coming up in a little bit, Witness Wednesday with Pastor Mark Wood. Hope you can stick around for that. And morning prayer coming up during the 9 o'clock hour. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news for over 90 years.